The background is very simple. I submitted a 10 minutes talk and was extended to 30 minutes. And so I asked Till if he would be participate. And from the first stage, he said, yeah, that sounds interesting. And after realizing what will happen here, he get abstained from this. And that's why I'm staying here alone. But you can catch him here and ask him what he is doing and for which company he is working, something like this. He's a student, and in this case, he is responsible for documentation, the progress the networking people in the company is making so that somebody else, for instance, the manager, understands what the networking people are doing. That's the main point. What Till is doing here, and one of the issues he had to handle was quality of service. He had to describe it in a way that other people, which are not technically addicted, will understand it. On the other hand, quality of service is something technical people do not understand and do not want to talk about, do not want to know about. For the purpose of this talk, I will refer to a lot of different equipments. These are the equipment we are currently have in the networking. We are trying to replace Cisco equipment by other technologies or newer technologies because we are going to 100 gigabit in the core. And Cisco will become too expensive for this. On the other hand, the Cisco devices are end of everything for about 5 to 12 years. So it's time to replace them. What we are doing is we are doing the replacement in the running network. That means that we have very long time frames for changing something, especially because we do not have feature equivalence. We had to find ways to provide a similar functionality of a different way and have to make a transition while all customers are online. So that takes time and will take more time next years. QoS. Why we are talking about QoS or why somebody is talking about QoS, it's simple, because we have a device which has more incoming bandwidth than outgoing bandwidth. That may mean that the device has more incoming devices than the packets are going out to other devices. So it has to decide which packets, if they are coming at the same time, going out first. The device had to make a lot of decisions. If such a collision is happening, what to do if a packet arrives which is more important than another, or who defines what is more important than another. If the decision goes wrong, or if the decision the device is taking will cause an unintended result, you get all the things you know from the postal services. Packets will arrive between early in the morning or late in the afternoon. You have to stay there all the day, or the packets will not arrive at all, and you do not know why. And several applications are not very happy with this. Others are a bit more tolerant. That's the technical point. There's a management point on the problem space if you are doing QoS and avoid these problems. There is no need to expand your network until it's too late. So in a lot of networks, the QoS is rolled out in a way that it does not work effectively. It's done in a way that you can say, yeah, we are doing QoS, we're marking traffic or doing anything else, but we never, never do anything on the wire. So if we get a congestion and we have a problem in the network, we can go to the management and say we have to expand our network, we have to acquire new lines, new router or something else. If you're doing wasn't doing it well, it will postpone these decisions up to a time where there is no router available. It will take months to get a new line, and you are lost. So a lot of network engineers going down and saying, "Yeah, we are doing QoS, and ignoring anything, and if something is happening in the network, going and replace it with faster hardware." So, in principle, we have two solutions for this problem space. The first one is very simple: avoid all the problems. That's what telcos are doing. That's what OTN, or what the optical transfer networks are doing. They simply reserve for every possible packet or frame a time slot and the interface where it will go out. So we have a complete parity. You book a bandwidth through the whole network beforehand. And if you do so, you do not have a problem because there is no bandwidth mismatch. There is no decision necessary to go and say, we have to decide which packets go first. Of course, it doesn't work in the internet. If you go to your customer and say, "Oh, you want to look for a video stream on YouTube, please reserve this 2 days before, and we will get a time slot you can look this video at 7:30. Bandwidth is reserved." I don't think that internet is working this way. So what we can do in QoS is we can take the decisions the devices are doing. The devices are doing these decisions any time. You can't stop them because packets arrive. The only thing you can do is you can manage this. So if you say, we are not doing QoS, because it's too complicated, it has any benefit, you are doing QoS, you're taking defaults. It might be useful default, it might be very bad defaults. So what I'm trying to do in this talk here is to guide you through the design process of QoS and to the implementation process of QoS for different platforms. They will see that there are different approaches for the hardware. The takeaway for you, in best case, is that you say, oh, it's not that complicated. It might be a lot of configuration, it might be a lot of reading, but at least I have a faint view where to start and where to go and which are the important points there. So let's start. QoS is a local decision on each device. You have to classify traffic. You have to go and say what's important. And if you're doing so on a larger network and you have the decision on each to make on each device, you have the problem that you have to know everything on your network on each device. That will be complex. And that's why people love to marking traffic on the edge, going on the edge saying, oh, I know what it is. The customer has the following requirements, or the service which has the following requirements to the network. So I make a special mark, and if I can reuse this mark at any time. So the others only had to recognize the mark and do not have to make the decision where it's coming from, which is going to anytime. And we have a lot of possibilities. The first possibility is the DSCP. It's field in IP, in IPv4 and IPv6, with a lot of possibilities. Forget anything you know about EF or any marks in this case. They are completely irrelevant. They go out of production for 20, 25 years. it's an opaque field. You have 64 values you can define in your own way. Of course, there are some common values which are defined by your external customers or your external equipment, and you, it's easier to keep them. If you all, if you redesign this, it's easier to keep them. The same goes for the three bits in the Ethernet header. If you are doing 802.1p, it's the other part of PQ. Q is for tagging, and P is for taking the reserved bit in Q for marking. There we have eight possibilities, and the problem is that it's not persistent. It will be removed on the next router, which will remove the Ethernet header and replace it by another one. And of course, if you have other transport mechanisms like MPLS, you have some bits there. For our network, we are transporting data for third-party customers, and they get very upset if we modify their packets. So we are not able to set the DHCP value in the packet which comes from the customer. We make a VXLAN transport for several services, so we might use the DHCP packet in the VXLAN header. We might have tech traffic from the customer, where we are not allowed to change the cost bits. So the only remaining field we can use for, in our network is the cost bit on the wire, the outer scope. So that means we have to use tech traffic on the interconnection. So. And then, that's the point where it becomes interesting. You have to make a model. You have to decide which traffic classes, which services you want to provide in your network. And if you're restricted to eight, you have to classify and you have to follow some constraints. The red, red numbers are hard to change, so don't try to do this. Device management, network control coming from the devices itself, sometimes is really a problem to change them. A normal internet is set to zero. That's common for a lot of devices, so do not try to change it. In our case, we want to provide background traffic, so we have a class behind the normal internet, for instance, for backups or something like this, that we can transport if there's some free space on the wire. And we have third-party traffic, and they require several classifications too. We had some problems with German Telecom, which insists that they want to have four classifications. Now they have four classifications because we are able to map their normal internet into our class zero. That's contractual compliant. The other point is if packets are arriving, they can be, and there is something on the network, and some packets are waiting on the outgoing interface. You can go and say add to the queue tail or bypass the queue. Priority means bypass. Round robin means we have multiple queues like in the supermarket, and we take one from each in round robin manner. If we're talking about bandwidth, it means we take one from, in this case, we take one from Q3, we take one from Q2, and we take four from Q1 and start over. And if somebody has some spare time, may have a look at Q0. That means that we have an effective bandwidth for this round robin pace, part, which says that two-thirds of the traffic are our normal internet, and that perfectly matches our traffic in the network too. So it's a good model. After modeling, you have to go and put it into the devices. In most cases, it's very simple because you can't model it, or you can't codify it. Only on Juniper, you are going there and define your code points and say, we have some names for this. It makes the configuration more easy to read. If you don't do this, you get some default names, and you will not be lucky with it. So please do. Define your code points. Next is, we have forwarding classes, traffic classes or something. The 8-1 we had on the table there. And on Juniper, we have to name them. If we don't do, we get default names, which are not appropriate. So we name them. And of course, we take the same values that we had defined in the table ourselves. priority low, we come to this later on. First thing to classify is host-generated traffic on the device. Most people are not aware that the device itself generates traffic, but it's really important to do so. Otherwise, you get struck with the classification the device is doing anyway. So if you have a routing daemon on device, it might use COSBIT 6. It might go to traffic class 6, which is fine because it's our network class. That's why it's our networking class. And if you are going to make access to the management network and inbound, you get class 7 management. That's fine that we have this, because we have defined it in this way. On the other hand, if you want to do it yourself on Juniper, you can do this. It's mainly here that you see you can do this, and you can do it in an interesting way. For instance, for ICMP, we are using a high loss priority, so it doesn't matter if the packets are dropped in the case that we have a congestion. They are more likely to be dropped than others. Okay. Then we have to classify incoming traffic from outside. Something is coming into the network. On the main reason why we are introducing this is that we had an unicast IPTV provider which insists on QoS. No, I don't go into this decision deeper. so we have to classify it. Everything coming from this source is our class real time and has to be classified this way. It's very simple. Simply say everything coming in this interface is this class. Otherwise, you have to go to the code points. I think that it will work this way. There should be a laser pointer. There is none. Okay. What's infrared? For high speed. 1,300 nanometer. Okay. No. Okay. Okay. For trust, we simply use the code points we found on the wire. These are the points on the right side, the code points which we have defined, and we say if you see this on an interface, then please put the traffic in the forwarding class and use the loss priority we have defined for this. On Arista, we do not do it per network. We do not do it on IP addresses. We have VLANs, where special services are provided, and we are classifying on based on VLAN. It's something a bit easier for us. Of course, you can do a match on IP address lists or the access list or something. This, in each of these cases, you need TCAM feature for this. So in the simple case, we have a classification based on VLANs. So we say if you have a VLAN on wire, then we put the traffic in the matching traffic class. Or for trust, it's simple, easy. We are going and say, if you see a cost field, trust it. If you see a cost field, you trust it. Trust in which way? Let's go back. The cost bit doesn't match the class we are using. How can we trust this? If we see a cost bit zero, will it be class zero? Okay. Arista is using a cost to traffic class map. The default map is this way. So it matches our requirements. That's the reason why, because it matches, that we define the traffic classes beforehand. But you can do it differently on per interface. You can say, I will use a different map. For instance, here for DTAC, as I said, we have exactly this problem that they require four classes and we can only provide three. So we map all the traffic which is not or explicitly not guaranteed with anything in the contract to class zero. In our case, it's don't care. Okay, classifying incoming traffic. We have a cost bit, we can look at the cost bit, we trust it, we map it to a traffic class. Same for Cisco. Cisco is using a DHCP-like classification internally. So you can say you have a DHCP, a virtual DHCP value for each packet, which is on the in the fabric. But the classification on the switches is not made this way. You can't classify packet traffic on incoming. It becomes a little bit complicated in this way. The only thing you can do is if you have unclassifiable traffic, for instance, traffic coming from outside and you want to put it in a special way and say that should be come in as if the cost bit was set to, then you can use the approach below saying for VLAN bop on the trunk, please set the cost bit to 6. It's a double definition. First, it really sets the cost bit to 6 on the incoming frame, which the header is dropped, and of course on the outgoing frame. It's the same. On the RSR, we have the same problem. We have an internal classification. It's called cross group. And we can use it to make an explicit translation. If you see a cost bit 7 on the wire, then put it in the cost group. Of course, we take the same numbers. Otherwise, it would be crazy. That's incoming classification. We have packets on the wire, we have classified them coming from the host, coming from a special interface, coming from a special VLAN, or coming from interconnection we can trust. Marking. On the edge, it was easy because we know the source, and now we want to mark it in a way that it goes to the next device. So in the interconnection, we want to put the same information going outside, the next one can use it as internal classification. It goes the same way. For each forwarding class, for each traffic class, you have to define for which loss priority you want to use which code point on the wire. That's a very, very lengthy definition. I only use it here for a single class. We have 8 classes. We could have more. And use the rewrite for this. Because we have several VLANs there, so we have unit star and wildcard to going out. The important point here is that you notice if we have a high loss priority, we can downgrade the traffic. So the next device can use the information and say, okay, this was traffic which had nearly been dropped beforehand, so if I have a pressure on the line, I can drop it now. It should not have been here on this device. That's a classification you can't do by reclassification on each device because you didn't know what the state on another router was. It might be a dynamic reclassification and makes your network something more interesting for you and harder to understand for your colleagues. On Arista, you can't do this, at least for our devices. We can't rewrite the cost bit because the command does not exist. It's not available. It's not available because it's always on, despite the documentation says otherwise. Doesn't matter. So even if the command does not exist, it works. And the only thing you have to do is to inverse the classifying step. You're defining a map and saying, if we have the following class, please set out the following bits. More or less straightforward. On Cisco, I said we are not able to make a classification on the switches. So the only point where you can set the outgoing cost values is on incoming policy. The packet arriving on an interface will be classified in a way that you say, for this packet, you are using the outgoing cost bit in the following way. Regardless, which interface I will choose later. That means if you're using these devices, you run into the problem that you have to use all the, on all the interfaces the same cost bits. And it doesn't mean that they have to trust it. You have to set it in any time. And if you want to use the same cost bits, incoming, outgoing, you have to clearly set cost. Set the cost bit by taking the cost bit value. Okay. For RSL, the same, you can use it straightforward, naming it cost group instead of traffic class. Now for the interesting point, hardware. Outgoing hardware have different number of queues. You have interface which is 2 queues, you have 1 queue, you have 8 queues. Most common case is 8 queues. That's why most devices have only 8 traffic classes, because they map it 1-to-1. If you have more than 8 traffic classes defined, you need to provide a mapping which traffic class you want, which forwarding class, outgoing queue you want to use. If you're mapping traffic to the outgoing queue, you will notice that you have 3 possibilities. You can policy traffic, can go and say, this customer is not allowed to have more than 200 megabits. Might be. You can shape traffic and saying, I do not want to use more than, and if delay traffic. But for our network, it doesn't care. We do not use any policy. We use scheduling because we want to use the full bandwidth for everybody, if possible. So scheduling is distributing the available bandwidth, and policing is making contractual compliance. And then there are drop profiles. We had heard a lot of cross loss priority or drop priority, and you can really define how a packet will be dropped. The typical drop profile you find in most devices linear. If you have a zero length queue, no packet is waiting on this, you have a zero probability that the packet will be lost because it will be sent out. If the queue is full, you will be 100% loss priority because there is no room to add a packet to the queue. In all other cases, the probability to drop the packet will increase if the queue is longer. You can modify this profile. I did it for Juniper in an aggressive, moderate, and easy way. So for the easy way, it's up to 80% on the queue. You will no loss at all, and then it will sharply go up to 100%. 100% is default on on the last, and 0-0 is the default on the other side. And you can make a nice graph how to drop packets on which level of queuing. The same is possible for Cisco. We do not use it there. And for Arista, it's not that easy because they do not like to drop packets. They prefer to make a warning beforehand, and we do not use this configuration at the moment, but that's the point where you can start reading if you want to do this. Hardware queues. I have 2 minutes from the start. It looks pretty complicated. It's not. It simply says if we have we define a scheduler, how to put packets on the queue. How many packets will be used in a special priority way, so bypass the queue, but then we stop and say 10% of the queue is used by this traffic. We stop here. There's no priority queue at, for a while, and we will take everything else. I urgently recommend to have a bandwidth limit for priority queues for everybody. Otherwise, you will starve any other traffic. Managing queues for Arista is in the same way. You define which queue get which bandwidth and where is the priority break. you can see the below the round robin definition is on Q3. And everything else, our lower classes will be round robin. But it doesn't make sense if we have a round robin and then we go back to a priority. It doesn't make sense. And the bandwidth will be get calculated in a new way. We have some different values here because device in different situation. So it's good. But if you come to a device which have only two queues, you get the following result up there. We have a traffic class to traffic queue to transmit queue mapping. And now the question: can anybody say how traffic class zero, traffic class one, which our normal integer traffic, how much bandwidth will it have on this interface? Traffic class 1 is mapped to Q0, the table below, in the middle. And we have 9% of the bandwidth for our normal internet. That's not the way we are expecting. So it's very simple. We simply use other a new definition and say we only have two classes and make there 10 to 90%. But it doesn't work this way. That's not the only point. There's another queuing mechanism from the central routing and switching device to the interfaces. It's virtual output queuing. And if you're looking there, we have 8. So we have to use the same definition for a 2 and an 8 queuing mechanism. Yeah, I know. On Cisco, don't do it on the 4500. You will get brain dead. On the RSR, it's more like Juniper, doesn't make any problem. And in order to find out what will go wrong, you have some commands. You can look at devices and see what's happening. There are 2 commands which do not seem very appropriate here. That one is show hardware counter drop. That will show you the drops from the virtual output queue from the internal ring in the Arista. We had problems there. We had output drops in this ring. It will not show up in Prometheus or something else. You will not get any counter unless you explicitly monitoring the internal ring. So if you have packet loss on a device, look if it will be very, very deep in the hardware. And for Cisco, you have to show, have to have a look at the logging, simply because if something goes wrong by configuring, you get an error message not on the configuration, but on the only in the log. Thank you.